You are part of Women for Refugee Women. What kind of organization is that?
So we are a small London-based charity. The heart of our work is supporting refugee women to challenge the injustices of the UK asylum system. So we do a lot of empowerment work to build the women's confidence and skills. And at the same time, we do campaigning as well. We do lots of research, like the research on destitution, advocate to policymakers. But as I say, we also empower the women so that they can, you know, lead research that affects them, lead campaigns that affect them, and tell their own stories to people in positions of power.
Now, you mentioned some injustices in the British asylum system. Your organization published a report this month, and this report deals with some of these injustices and in general with the situation of refugee women in UK. Can you tell us more about the report's topic? What is it about exactly?
Yes, of course. So I spent, along with refugee women with lived experience of destitution, I spent the last year talking to about 106 women who had sought asylum in England and Wales. So women who come to our charity, but also the women who attended the grassroots partners across the UK, have spoken about their experience of being made destitute. Now, when I use that word, I mean extreme poverty that has come about because of having no right to work and no state-provided support or housing. Now, women can be made destitute at various points after filing their asylum application, but overwhelmingly, it affects women once their claims have been rejected. It's very hard at that stage to get access to state support. The criteria is extremely narrow and complex, and it's safe to say that you need high-quality legal advice, which in the current sort of landscape is really hard to come by. In short, since 2005, legal representation, free legal representation, has been severed. So what we wanted to look at is, well, how do these women survive once they're made destitute? How do they eat? Where do they sleep? What do they turn to? And how does this affect their safety and well-being? And of course, I can tell you about our findings as we go on in the interview. But that's in sum what we were looking to do.
What can you say for maybe the people that are listening to our radio station and do not know much about the situation in UK? How would you describe the asylum system in UK?
Yeah, so I guess just to keep it short, what we have seen for a number of years now is that there is what's been called a culture of disbelief at the Home Office, which is the body that assesses that receives asylum applications and assesses those claims. So when I say culture of disbelief, I mean that basically when a decision maker receives an asylum application, too often the starting point for that decision maker is, this person isn't telling the truth. Yep, this person is lying. And what that means is they're putting a really high burden on the individual claiming asylum to prove that they are entitled to refuge, a burden that is unrealistically high and unlawful. It's contrary to both UNHCR and UK policy standards. And as a result of that, what we're seeing is that an increasing number of individuals who may otherwise be entitled to refugee status are being denied. And we saw that, I guess, most recently in the Windrush scandal, where basically individuals who had, you know, arrived in the UK before 1973, primarily from Caribbean countries, who'd spent significant periods of time, you know, in the UK lawfully were denied their legal rights and in some cases wrongly detained and deported. In short, there's a culture of disbelief in the UK asylum system. And now that jeopardizes both men and women, but it's really important for me to say that there are sort of additional kind of challenges that women face. Who have come to seek refuge. So one of the things that we've sort of heard and that has been documented through research by NGOs is this insufficient awareness among decision makers of gender-based violence and particularly how that gender-based violence falls within the UN Refugee Convention and the UK's obligation to protect refugees. And it's important to mention that about 78% of the women whom we spoke to had suffered some form of gender-based violence, whether that's rape, forced marriage, forced prostitution, female genital mutilation, or some other form of sexual abuse. So this insufficient awareness is really jeopardizing women's ability to seek the protection that they deserve.
So the injustices or the different situations that people are in that are asylum seekers or come from different countries to the UK are especially hard for women. That's what also the report of Women for Refugee Women says. And now I want to ask a bit about the background. I assume that you collected a lot of data and talked to a lot of women. You already mentioned over 100 women that you talked to. How did you make the report, or what can you say about the process?
This piece of research on destitution, this came from requests that asylum-seeking women in our network made themselves. The next step was to do a sort of workshop, I would say, with women from the various grassroots groups that we work with. So that includes London, Manchester, Birmingham, and Coventry. And we met with those women to essentially develop the idea of the research, to talk about the various ways in which destitution had affected them, but also other women that they know. And at the same time, looking at some of the root causes of the problem that we have today. The step after that was to develop the tool to collect the data, which in this case was a questionnaire. So I drafted the questionnaire alongside refugee women with lived experience of destitution. They, you know, fed into sort of the issues that the questionnaire should cover, but also some of the language to make sure that it was accessible and understandable to refugee women, that it was sufficiently sensitive. Thereafter, I trained refugee women with experience of destitution to collect the data with me. So we would run sessions that were, you know, that were essentially based on the preference of the participants. So they either took place on a one-to-one basis or in a small kind of focus group with no more than three or four women. And then after that, the data was, after we spoke to about 106 women, the data was analysed and then, you know, a report was drafted, which the refugee women, our partners, fed into, including the recommendations at the end, you know, including the changes that we want to see. That was the main process. And it's important to highlight that in terms of where we went, we spoke to women from Birmingham, London, Manchester and Coventry, as well as for the first time we went out to Wales. So we did interviews in Swansea and Cardiff. But of course, destitution affects many more women. You know, these are the women who are in our networks, who we reached out to. We believe that, you know, 106 is sufficiently representative and reliable, but there are women in other parts of the UK, including in Scotland and Northern Ireland, who suffer from this issue.
Let's talk about the report's findings. What did you find out, basically?
It's so difficult to summarize, but in a nutshell, anyway, we found that women were, you know, hungry, homeless, and unable to meet their basic needs. And as a result of being unable to meet these basic needs, they were often exposed to sexual violence that they were most of the time unable to report to the police and to seek protection from because of very real fears of deportation and detention. So what we have here is basically almost all of the women I spoke to said that they were hungry at some point, and about a quarter had begged outside for food. Almost half had at some point slept outside. So whether that's on the streets, on a church floor, in a telephone booth, or riding the night bus. And almost all of the women had struggled to keep themselves clean whilst destitute. 65% had struggled to access period products like pads or tampons. 70% of the women said that their physical health had got much worse once they were forced into the state of extreme poverty. And 95% said that they became depressed. A third almost had tried to kill themselves. And just going back to the sexual violence that I mentioned, I think one of the most shocking findings for me is that, you know, women who had fled extreme human rights abuses from their country of origin were being re-subjected to sexual violence in the UK as a result of destitution. So about a quarter of women were raped or had experienced a form of sexual violence when sleeping outside or, you know, while sofa surfing with strangers. And over a third had been forced into unwanted relationships that in many cases became abusive, and as a result of which the women experienced rape, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. Yeah, so 32 women actually were raped or sexually abused, both in their country of origin and again when destitute in the UK, and 10 women were raped or sexually abused at three stages. So in their country of origin, whilst travelling to the UK to seek safety, and again when made destitute as a result of the asylum system. Yeah, shocking findings.
Yes, that's really shocking. A lot of refugee women experience a lot of horrible things on a daily basis. So as a summary, what do you think what needs to change to improve their situations?
I think it's such a good question. I think, well, you know, in short, what we're asking is that nobody should be made destitute, right? At the end of the day, we are all human and we all deserve food and shelter and safety. In terms of sort of specific ways in which that can be ensured, well, of course, there needs to be a way to make sure that support continues for those who are refused asylum until the point at which, you know, the woman has regularized her immigration status or has returned to her country of origin, should that be appropriate. But at the same time, we have to look at some of the root causes of this, in the sense that, you know, the vast majority of women who I spoke to said that they felt that their, you know, their stories of persecution weren't heard by the Home Office. They weren't believed. And, you know, these are women who have experienced serious gender-based violence. And I think it's imperative that that culture of disbelief is addressed so that accurate and humane decisions can be made. At the same time, we have to target the sort of broader hostile environment. You know, we saw from sort of 2012 the hostile environment being introduced, which was essentially a kind of swath of measures to make it really difficult for migrants to access basic services, particularly those who had been refused asylum or whose status was insecure, the aim being to encourage them to leave the UK. Now, I think that whole policy as a whole needs to be targeted. These narratives that we have in the political and the public domains of, you know, the good migrant, the bad migrant, the deserving human and the undeserving human, until we don't dismantle those, you know, we are going to see policies like enforced destitution, questions that we have to ask ourselves as a nation, that we have to ultimately get to the bottom of if we want to see long-lasting and real change.
And these are questions that you can also ask, also talk about in Germany, I would say. I have one last question. Your report goes along with the hashtag Sisters Not Strangers. What can you tell us about that?
The fact that these people who come to our shores for safety are human beings. It could be any of us, you know. We're just very lucky, those of us who have not suffered the things that they have. But at the end of the day, we're all human beings, and that's what unites us. And at the same time, we wanted to, you know, it was a way of kind of showing solidarity amongst women